Good morning, 740 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's good to have you with us this morning. I appreciate it on this beautiful Monday morning. Sheriff Chip Simmons is also here with us. Good to have you with us, Sheriff.
Good to be here. How are you?
Turn his mic on. There we go. All right, how about that?
It's better to be here with a mic on.
It is.
Yeah,
better,
it's good.
Good to see you all beautiful and joining us.
Thank you. Caught me off guard.
I know, you know. Man giving a man confidence.
I look behind myself.
It's all right. Cops, Cars, and Crawfish, big success?
Was it a big success? Yes. We're so proud of the opportunity to have this event at Five Flags Speedway. We had, I guess, 1,400, maybe 1,500 people go through there. We had well over 100 cars at the car show. I have to look at my text and see how many pounds, like 500-something pounds of crawfish. Just a great event. Great. Again, we talked about the weather because the weather kind of pushes things.
Right.
In the past couple of years, we've been looking up at the sky and trying to figure out if it's going to rain.
Yeah.
Especially if you have, we were commenting on this earlier, if you have a nice car and you want to participate in a car show, but if it looks like it's going to be rainy and muddy, do I want to drive that car or not? But in this situation, it was just a great opportunity for us to engage with the community and a great opportunity for us to raise money for the foundation.
Wonderful. Did you have a total for how much money you raised?
The foundation put out a post, I think about $50,000, a little over $50,000.
Nice.
There's some costs going to be taken out of that, but I just talked to Whitney Lucas, our foundation president, and she told me it was about around $50,000.
Okay.
Again, there's still some counting to go on, some subtracting to go on, but what a great event. And the value of it is to see the kids participating in some of the games that we had where they put – like crawfish claws on their hands, and they're picking up, you know, fake corn, and they're throwing it in there. There's just the excitement that was around there, and you know, Cat Country was there, and Brent and I did a couple of spots. It was just a great opportunity, and it's kind of unique because it's in the central part of the county, and a lot of things happen downtown. This is one of the big things, maybe the biggest thing that happens outside of the fair.
Yeah, that was big deal over the weekend for sure. We had a couple of big events here in town. I know that was one you guys were doing. Canine Streeter was in the final four for the statewide competition for what? Best looking canine, most trained. What was the actual thing?
I think it was the best pitcher. Whoever people thought looked
it was a popularity contest.
Okay. Yeah, the beauty contest, I guess.
Whoever looked the most like Run Joe Run. Okay.
Run Joe Run. Yeah, yeah.
Or you remember that?
10-10 or one of
there
those.
There you go. Ancient TV shows that even John is not old enough to remember.
Yeah, so we submitted a picture. It was kind of a fun thing to do, and obviously it was in relation to March Madness, so you had I'm not sure how many dogs, but then the winners go advanced to the Final Four. I think we made it to the Final Four, but we weren't able to cut the nets down this year.
Oh, okay, all right.
So, maybe next year.
Was he excited to be in the Final Four?
When I asked him, I talked to him, he said he had some excitement. He did. He had a level of excitement. I wasn't sure. He was nursing a little bit of a pulled hammy.
Okay.
But he was doing pretty good.
He was worried that in the prancing portion that it might demerit him,
Well, we thought that maybe people would understand that this is the same dog jumped off the bridge and he's recuperating, but no one seemed to care about heroics.
Okay, they didn't want the backstory.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll keep that in mind for the future. I was talking with him. Well done. All right. There's always crimes. I guess the girlfriend hired some friends to assault her boyfriend in a car at Ashton Brosnahan Park. Like they went there to park and kiss, I'm supposing. And then what happened?
Well, yeah. 17-year-old girl decides she's going to call her, I think it's her ex 17-year-old boyfriend. Hey, let's meet and have a discussion. I'll leave it at that. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to meet
about. Okay, so at least it was an ex.
It was going to be maybe a reconciliation. Well, it'd be a, hey, let's talk some things out.
Okay.
Unbeknownst to him, the poor guy, he gets in the car, and all of a sudden the two people get open up the car doors and start beating him up and pistol whipping him and doing that sort of thing.
So they're armed. They have guns.
They have guns, yes.
Okay.
He fights back, is able to get in the driver's seat of the car and drive away. So we found out throughout the course of the investigation.
That's her car or his car?
I don't recall whose car
it was.
Go on. I think it may have been her car. But throughout the investigation, we determined that she had sent some text and there was some intention to leave the car doors unlocked so that they can enter. And
Maybe make off with the car and her phone or something like that?
Yes. Yeah, okay. That's how we were able to get some of the information from her phone. We gleaned from her
Good
phone.
Good Lord.
Yeah. It was.
Do we have arrests?
We did arrest her, and we're looking for the other two, the conspirators. We're looking for them.
Okay.
So, again... Not a great story.
Wow.
Not a happy ending to a love story there.
No. Wow. Okay. And you also had a warrant service that netted some drugs and guns?
Yeah. Yeah, we did this up on the north end of the county. And, we talked a lot about what our narcotics units do and how I've added more people because of the fentanyl crisis and because of the seriousness and the priority that we place on the drugs, because drugs lead to guns and guns lead to gun violence, obviously. In this particular case, we serve a search warrant, got about 350 grams of marijuana, almost $6,000 in cash, multiple firearms, including a shotgun, a 9mm handgun, and obviously some ammunition, some THC vapes and cartridges and such. Kuhn is the individual we arrested. Joseph Ryan Kuhn. He's 37 years old. He happens to be a four-time convicted felon. So
the guns are a no-no.
He should have had the guns, shouldn't have had the drugs, shouldn't have done a lot of things that he had been doing. So we ended up putting him in jail. And, again, our narcotics unit doing a good job.
How do criminals acquire their guns? I mean, I know sometimes it's, stolen out of cars and stuff like that. But, I mean, seriously, there's a guy who can't obviously go to the store and buy guns. Okay, they're going to do a background check. He's going to fail. Okay. Right. How does he get a gun?
Well, they steal them. Like I said, they can take them from a car. They can take them from a house. They can take them from a friend's house. Sometimes they do what they call a straw purchase, where if I can't buy a gun, but you can buy a gun, then I give you the money. You buy the gun. I reward you for your purchase, which is illegal. You can't do that either. In fact, they'll ask you who the gun's for on the form. So you're not allowed to do that. So there are they steal them or they borrow them. Or they have a straw purchase. So otherwise, you're not supposed to have the gun.
Okay. I know what I know on TV, and usually TV tells me false things, so I was curious to ask, what it actually is. You guys had a social media post that, the basic premise of it is, I parked on the Pensacola boardwalk, and I got towed because apparently anybody can tow you for any reason. The bad businesses, the scammy kind of sheriff's office is bad. Everybody's bad. They took my car. Bad, bad, bad. And you guys have a pretty aggressive response to social media posts that are false or misleading or that are going to tarnish your reputation. And in this case...
Well, yeah, that's what happened. We were made aware of a social media post, and we're like, wait, that doesn't sound right. So we do look into these
things. And I had seen this on some local groups before you had responded. I had seen it. Okay, but you guys had seen it too, and?
We had seen it, and when we inquired about it, I said, hey, we take a picture every time we tow a car. We're like, that's great. Let's take a look at this picture. And so that we can respond, because, hey, if we're wrong, we'll say, hey, we messed that up. And we've done that in the past. I speak out if we do something wrong, but I'll also speak out in defense of our deputies if we're doing good work and they deserve to be credited for that good work. In this particular case, when I saw the picture, she did have a handicap placard. The individual had a handicap placard in there on the visor or on the rearview mirror. But the problem is, if you see by the picture, is in between two handicapped places, but it's in a blue area, which is what I'll call a prohibited zone. It's so that people with wheelchairs or the ramps, they need that extra room. And it's clearly not a parking space. So it got on us that, hey, she's complaining. And it's not even legitimate. You're blasting some people, the tow truck company, the sheriff's office for stuff you shouldn't be blasting them on. And I've got a pet peeve of mine about the handicap spots in the first place. So when it came to me and they said, hey, you think we should respond to this? And I said, yes, let's go ahead. And we didn't call names.
Mm-hmm.
Because we knew that a lot of people had seen this original post.
Yep.
And we wanted to make sure people understood that first of all, we did nothing wrong. We did everything the way we were supposed to do it. And secondly, is to remind people that you can't park in this middle spot either.
Right.
So, it's because, again, it blocks a ramp and you just can't get.
And, they're parked right in front of the curb cut, which is where the wheelchair would go up. They're parked in a space that is clearly hashtag marked off old markings and new markings, the blue rectangle, which, as you say, is supposed to make it so that doors and wheelchairs and things can be accessed by the cars parked properly in the handicap spots.
Right.
So this is clearly parked in the wrong place. Did she apologize to you?
We haven't heard from her.
Oh, interesting. Okay. well, we'll see. You one can hope. I mean, a boy can dream.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're able to post something and be bold about it, you should be right.
Yeah. Unpost, retract.
Be right.
I apologize if not. Last thing is, obviously, we've talked previously, and of course, this is a major story in our area, is we had a deputy in Walton County who, was trespassing somebody off of a store. The person had a concealed gun that they had not realized and turned around and shot him, and the deputy shot back. They both wound up dying.
Right.
Okay. Happens all the time. You know, as you said previously, deputies trespass people all the time.
Right.
The question that had come to my mind, and I know other people had asked as well, which is, does that incident make you change your policies for trespassing? Do you frisk people before you trespass them? Do you handcuff them to trespass? Like, just as a layman, it seems like you wouldn't, because any of that stuff can lead to escalated response. The person can get upset, and you're always trying to avoid that problem. But you tell me, you're the expert. I know you guys looked at it and thought about it.
Well, and I think that's it. We look at it and we look at our own policies. Most of our policies actually are based upon state statute and what you can do. There is a search, and then there's what they call a pat down or a protective frisk. And these rules have changed over the years. You are allowed to do a protective frisk if you're concerned about your safety. And
okay.
Again, what makes you
if
concerned
like,
about
kind
your
of like
safety?
That reasonability standard. If there's a reasonable concern about safety,
you can articulate,
safety.
Hey, he was acting a little bit agitated, a little bit weird, and they kept putting their hands in their pockets. There are opportunities for law enforcement officers to do a protective frisk for their own safety. And
sure.
A lot of times we'll say that, hey, for my own safety, I just want to make sure you don't have anything in your pockets. If you insist on putting something in your pockets. But as you say, that can escalate something pretty quickly. So it's really just up to the law enforcement officer to determine, if you don't do a protective frisk, then you understand that you don't know what this individual has on them or is willing to do. Again, that's a rough call, though, because you talk to so many people, and a lot of times what you just want to do is clear the area that you're in and get to a better area.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a small area contained with a bunch of, I'm assuming it's like maybe a smaller room and there may be furniture in there. You don't want to have to do something in there. You need more room to be able to talk to the person and keep a safe distance, 6 or 8 foot distance when you're talking to somebody for your own safety. So a lot of times you do want to just get, hey, let's walk outside. Let's go out here mm-hmm. and just have this conversation. And
that's the goal of a trespass anyway, is just to get them off the property. So
your intention at that point is not to arrest somebody. The store owner or manager wants them gone. And okay, we can do that. It's your property. You have the right to do that. So let's just get you out of here first, which is what they wanted in the first place. And then maybe run you, see if you have any warrants on you and get information that way. So the answer to your question is, I don't know that we would change anything. We would use this as a training reminder, and as if the deputies don't see that and don't know that and realize, that these things can happen. But in regards to training, we train based upon state statutes and court rulings and, precedent and that sort of thing. So we've been up on it, for so many years. We're on the pretty much on the right side of all where we do.
And even, like, again, because I know people think things like this, well, why didn't he have his gun drawn if he's escorting this guy out? Well, you can't just draw your gun on somebody, and it's not that'll escalate too. I mean, it's not a practical thing to advise that you just walk around with your gun drawn because you're walking somebody out of a store. Like, that's a much more risky scenario than even this, right?
Yeah, well, we don't just
and there are rules, and there are rules.
Right. Yeah, and plus, if the guy was to fight, what are you going to do? You got a gun? You got to holster the gun now? What are you going to do? Again, a lot of it is just based upon the officer perceives at the point mm-hmm. at that moment. If he's concerned or she's concerned about their safety, they can take the additional steps. They could, again, call for backup. They could wait to confront someone until backup gets there. They can move it to a safer location. They could do a protective frisk. All of that's going through their mind, and it's based upon the training. That's why the job is so difficult.
Absolutely. And that's part of what I wanted to highlight in asking you is that, you can't just create a rule that easily solves a problem that obviously the professionals have thought about, looked at, dealt with, and know, well, what you think of as an easy solution is not the solution you think it is. And that's why the job is so difficult. And you got to make these decisions quickly based on experience. I mean, you know, it's all of it. Sheriff Chip Simmons, sir, always a pleasure. Thank you for the time, as always. Thanks for teaching us and for keeping us safe. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Y'all take care.